Hi, my name is Jamie Mackay and I head the Postgraduate Learning and Teaching Programmes at the Royal Conservatoire of Scotland. And this podcast is part of a series where I ask established arts educators about their practice. Geoffrey Tan is an experienced theatre director, drama educator and creative producer who's based in Singapore and has taught drama, theatre, playwriting, lesson planning, evaluation, stage and arts management for students in primary, secondary, polytechnic and universities both in Singapore and overseas. I met Geoffrey at the ITAC 6 conference in Oslo in September 2022 and I'm very pleased that he agreed to do this podcast. For any arts educators interested in our programmes, for more information on the part-time blended learning MEd in Learning and Teaching in the Arts, please go to our webpages at rcs.ac.uk/MED. So, just as a way of an introduction, could you introduce yourself and say a little about your current role as an arts educator?
Okay, so hi, my name is Geoffrey Tan. I'm a theatre director, a drama educator, and of late I would also include as an arts educator and creative producer. That's a lot of hats to wear for one person. But you know, as an independent arts maker, that's how it is in Singapore. So I'm based in Singapore, but I have, a desire to work internationally, to collaborate, to share practice. And I resonate a lot as a teaching artist because I think that's sort of what we do all the time. Whether I'm, directing in a professional production, in a community production, there is that kind of education, or at least the pedagogy of education is involved, right? In scaffolding, in guiding and facilitating the actors or the participants to understand what we're trying to do within the arts experience. And of course, if there's a public-facing kind of a showcase or show, then, where is it that we're working to? And, the why, right? And I think as an educator, that whole idea of being clear about our objectives, our outcomes, are extremely important so that we don't get waylaid or get so curious about the world that we get overwhelmed with, all the various information. So sorry, it's a long introduction, but that's me in a nutshell.
No, perfect. Thank you very much. I knew you had a rich role and wearing many hats. So that's really interesting to get that insight. So then, when you're working with learners, what's your goal?
I think whichever context that I'm working with, I'm interested really in the opening of hearts and minds. It sounds really altruistic and big, but I think that's what it's about. Whether it's about learning about the craft of theatre or whether it's just learning about themselves. I feel that that's my ultimate goal, which is, how do we open this heart that we don't just look within ourselves and, navel gaze, but become more aware of, the space around us, the people around us, the energy around us. And I think only with that openness of heart that we can then begin to open our minds to see other perspectives. And for me, I think part of the, working with learners is to create enough open space for them to find their own connections and make their own meaning. I feel that that's the most satisfying way of working for me. And I think the last thing I want to say is about reflecting. I feel that, as humans, we are all so busy with so many things. And until we take time to reflect, to think, not just to look back, but also to look forward. And also to make sense of, where we're at, right? So this process of reflecting, I think, is something that's quite important for all learners. Uh, So I would say that's one of my, you know, other than opening hearts, minds, it's also an invitation to reflect.
Well, that's great. Thank you. And what barriers get in the way of that goal then?
I think a lot of it is here. A lot of people feel that they can't, they're not confident, or maybe they're not even aware that they're privileged, you know, because they've had everything given to them in a silver platter. They don't have to worry about a lot of things. And until they encounter someone who is different from themselves, that they then begin to open their hearts to a different experience, open their minds to maybe sometimes can be quite confronting, because, you know, we're all creatures of comfort. And therefore, you know, to open the heart and to open the mind are two very challenging obstacles. And I feel that as a learner, as a teacher, as a facilitator, as an arts maker, that's the constant challenge, you know. It's not just about me helping others, but also how do I find that balance and open space, you know, spaces within myself. So you know, we talk about role modeling. And I feel that that's extremely important, that, you know, if I want my students to be curious about the world, then I need to be curious. I need to walk in the forest. I need to go to the museums. I need to go to different dance parties, you know, and not be afraid.
I mean, you've already kind of begun to answer that question. What strategies do you use to help you achieve your goal or deal with the barriers? So that role modeling yourself, is there any other strategies you also employ to help you?
Yeah, I think we need to trust the arts. I think a lot of the times we advocate for the arts, but in the process, in the fervor of trying to convince everyone else that, you know, it's an impactful, meaningful experience, a lot of times we forget that, you know, we need to trust and we need to take time. You know, it's like reflections. You can't force reflections. The same thing, you can't force art to happen. You can't force people to like the art or like music, or, you know. And so for me, it's like trust the process, be patient. And I feel that those are the strategies, you know, that would unveil itself, right? I don't know if there's time for a story. I'll tell you the story, but you feel free to edit, right? So currently I'm teaching a lot of undergraduates, teenagers. So one of the things we've been talking about is, you know, how do we get young people to care? Right, it's such a big concept, and you know, a lot of people think caring is doing community service. It's about, you know, pity. It's about doing good. But when we think about what is it that drives you to engage, it's a very different story. It's not just about doing good anymore. It's about sitting and being with this community that you're working with. It is not about what you want to do for the community, but it's about you watching and listening and finding out if, you know, what does the community need? You know, and we can't impose theater if theater is not what they're used to and theater is not what they want. So in preparing to get the students to have that shift of mindset, I did a story drama on The Giving Tree. And, you know, there was some resistance or hesitance at first. But when I shifted the focus to say, let's do this for yourselves, right? You're not going to role play children. You're not going to role play vulnerable groups, but you're just going to do this for yourself. The energy, the collaboration, the creativity changed, the air changed, you know. And in the end of that hour and a half, the teenagers were, you know, they wrote, you know, pieces, they wrote letters, they wrote poems about happiness, about caring, about love. And then I got them to build an installation. And it was such a beautiful surprise moment for them and for me, you know, to see where the teenagers are at. And I think that's why I say, you know, we need to trust the process and take time, because without forcing, they discovered, you know, the pleasure of playing, the pleasure of reflecting, the pleasure of working with someone they don't know to make this installation as a collaborative celebration of their little bits of contribution. So sorry, it's such a long story, but I hope it's given a clearer idea of what I'm talking about in terms of strategies to engage learners to overcome their own barriers. Yep.
Absolutely worth taking the time for. It was a great story, you know, and I think it's really helpful to have these kind of ways of illustrating the key points. It'll be staying in the cut. Don't worry. Okay, so how do you measure your success as an arts educator?
I think there are many ways of documentation. And I think if you are talking about measuring success, then of course you're talking about evaluation. And I guess you have to be quite clear, what is it that we're evaluating? Of course, the official answer is, you know, re-look at your objectives, re-look at the processes, and see if you've met all those objectives and, you know, whether the outcome was what you intended to work. But I think in arts education, a lot of the impact can only be seen over time. And sometimes it takes a longer time for it to, you know, it's like planting a seed, right, in the forest. When you plant a seed in the forest, you don't quite know how tall or how wide this tree is going to be until 10 years later. So I feel that how I would measure would be to take stock of the little steps, take stock of the little shifts, and then over time, look back at these shifts and changes to then make and look at the big picture of, you know, has it really changed? Or am I just looking for what I want to look at?
Yeah, no, that's a great response. Thank you, Jeffrey. So when you think about your learners, how would you describe the ideal relationship you want to have with your learner?
I feel more and more in this day and age, I mean, in Asia, in the past, it's always the master-teacher relationship. You know, the teacher knows everything. The student is there to be a sponge. But in this day and age, social media, people are well-traveled, people are well-read. I feel it should be an equal relationship where, you know, I mean, I really love the idea of being a facilitator more than a teacher. Because, you know, when I'm facilitating, instead of telling the students what they need to learn, I'm flipping and asking myself, what is this bigger question that would give the students enough space to explore, right? So the other thing that I'm currently teaching is this thing called Global Arts Perspective for a group of arts managers. And instead of talking about, you know, I just had two lectures so far, but it, again, instead of me just lecturing, I've converted them really into questions, right? Broad enough questions to get them to think and debate and to explore. And then my role in the lecture is really to show the different perspectives and then get the students then to decide, what is your position? How do you feel about this? Why do you say this? And it's been really fun because I think the students are enjoying that kind of critical reflection, investigative approach, right? Rather than being spoon-fed, you know, they're thinking, right? And so just yesterday, the lesson was about controversial curatorial, curation and programming, right? So the question is, you know, is some controversial and curatorial and programming important in the arts, right? Or how does, you know, does controversy sells, right? So it was really fun, and I think the examples I found really, I could see it blew the students' minds because they didn't realize how you know, the decisions we make in art, the decisions we make in programming has such a big societal ripple that if we're not careful, if we didn't research enough, if we don't know exactly what we're saying, it's going to upset a lot of people, right? So you can see from Documenta 15, you can see from the 25 arts groups and artists pulling out the Sydney Festival this year that, you know, people are clear about their own values. And if the festival is going to take $20,000 in support of something that the majority don't believe in, you know, people will stand up and withdraw. And so I think that's exciting because that's the world that we're in. You know, nothing is as straightforward and as simple. And so therefore, I feel as an educator, then my role is to show the complexity, to show the intricacies of decisions. And of course, not to frighten the students to say, you know, go and do something else that's much easier. But really, this is the complex world that we're in. And I think the exciting thing then is how do we navigate that complex relationship? And so my ideal relationship, which is your first question, right, is to really find space, show the context. I think the word that I was looking for is the context. Context is everything. And I feel that if as a facilitator, as a teacher, as an arts educator, if I can present the different contexts and the complications and the complexities and help the learner to make meaning, to make sense, to make their connections, I think that that's when it happens. You know, not just the students, but also myself as a facilitator, making that connection myself, you know, so it becomes a win-win. We are all learning and we are all experiencing this new found knowledge. And I think that's most exciting when it's an equal partnership, not one where I'm the expert and the students are just waiting to learn or waiting to be told what it is. Sorry, another long answer to your short question.
No, it was a very rich answer, and it was every minute of it was absolutely worth it. No, that's great. Thank you again. And you mentioned this a little bit, but in terms of your own practice, what three values then are central to your practice as an arts educator? You're only allowed three.
Okay, I think inclusivity is more and more so important now. And regardless, I mean, it's not just in the world of the disability, you know, I think inclusivity in all sense, inclusivity in being intergenerational, inclusivity in being regardless of race, language, and background, right? That the arts has no discrimination. So then, why should we as arts educators have that kind of value judgment, right? So I feel that inclusivity is the big one. The second value, it's connections. Connections in all sense, in making sense of what's happening, but connections in also in fields outside of where we're at. Connections to people, to space, to history, to time. And I think the last one would be curiosity, that, you know, it's so important to be curious, because if we think we know everything, it's sort of the end and we're just waiting. So I feel that curiosity, it's extremely important. I didn't rank them that way, but it feels like we need to be inclusive, you know, an open heart and open mind. And then, of course, not just opening for everyone, but also to make connections so that communities can emerge, right? And communities are important because they support that curiosity. So in a way, I think my values sort of interlink, support each other. Yeah.
Excellent. Thank you. Okay. So if you could choose a mentor from any time in history, could be a real person, could be a fictional person, someone who could support your arts education practice, who would you choose?
There are many, many, you know, there are many wonderful people who are mentors. But I think I would still go back to my first boss, who is the late Kuo Pao Kun. He's Singaporean, but he originally came from China, and he's a thinker, a bilingual playwright, and theatre director. I am eternally grateful to him because he gave me my first job as a resident director. But beyond being just a job, I think I really enjoyed that 2 intense years of thinking deeply about practice, right? So it was hard, you know, because I've never worked in that culture before. So the first, you know, it was quite like, oh, when will I get this right? Right? You know, rewriting and writing a script. But I appreciated after 13 drafts that it takes time and you can't rush a creative piece of work. And it was so joyous to see the actors and everything come together when we've given it enough time and space for the ideas to grow. So I would still, you know, and I think I have so much more to learn from him, but, you know, it was a financial crisis. So after 2 years, you know, we had to leave and do something else. And of course, sadly, he passed away with cancer. And so, I mean, he was quite old, but I feel that there was still so much more he wanted to do and so much more that he could still contribute. You know, he's probably the only playwright, I think, who's been translated to more than, I don't know, 7 or more languages, and his plays have been performed everywhere because his ideas are very local and yet universal. And of course, he works in the idea of allegory, which then opens up for a lot of ways of thinking about the world. So I would still want to learn, you know, if I've given that opportunity to work with the late Pao Kun.
And if you could ask him one question about something that may help you now, what question would you ask?
The question would be, how has it been since you've left this earth? Because I'm wondering, you know, because he was such a creative, patient thinker, right? He didn't just start his practice performing arts school in 1965 when Singapore gained independence. It was really an investment in a training school that actually produced a lot of the current theatre makers, producers, actors. So that kind of a vision and foresight, I think it's something that I wish I had a fraction of that, that kind of ability to see beyond time, right? And therefore the question is, you know, does it ever stop? Does creativity ever stop? How might creativity look like?
Great question. Yeah. Can I just for listeners to make sure I've got the spelling of his name right? What?
Yes, it's a K U O.
K U O. Yep.
P A O.
P PAO, yep.
K-U-N.
K-U-N.
You can Excellent. Google him. And if you need help, you just let me know. I can send you his bio and all that.
Excellent. Thank you, Jeff. So if that was your question, what do you think he would answer?
I think he would say... You never know. Because, you know, if we know what's going to happen, then why do it? Right? If we know where creativity is going to take us, then why do it? What might you discover if, you know, I think it's this courage and bravery to think outside the box, to think the unthinkable, right? I mean, he's often quoted for this saying, right, that a worthy failure I'm maybe not getting this right, but something along the lines of, you know, a worthy failure is much better than a mediocre success. Right, that you really need to push and try, and then you know, right? But if you start off knowing that this is what you're going to get, it's a bit boring, don't you think?
I would agree, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks, Jeffrey. So, finally, is there anything else you'd like to say about your arts education practice? Anything you haven't touched on?
I think I'm very blessed with the various opportunities and people that I've met in my journey of, you know, learning and working. And I'm just acknowledging and grateful for these unexpected opportunities to practice and learn. And I hope that I can continue to give, to share, to mentor the next generation of learners, the next generation of practitioners, producers, arts makers who might appreciate, you know, maybe the little experience that I've got, and also challenging me to keep learning and to keep thinking more deeply and critically about how we are doing things.
Well, I just want to say thank you so much for engaging in these questions and providing such rich, wonderful responses. It's been hugely enjoyable hearing your responses to these questions. So
thank you.
I'd just like to say a huge thank you on behalf of myself and anyone who's listening to our podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. For more podcasts in this series, go to portal.rcs.ac.uk/arts-educator-interviews.